Happy New Year, everybody. Happy 2020. Welcome to the end of society as we know it.
It's all burning down.
It's going to be some real Mad Max shit about 12 months from now.
2020, the year of the tire fire. Welcome. Hot girl tire fire.
Welcome. I'm spraying my face with chrome right now.
Welcome to season
two. I got that cultural reference.
Yay!
Good job, Hannah.
Carry on.
Welcome to season two of the Armageddon cast.
What you can expect in the next season is Hannah and I might get a couple more cultural references.
They're learning and growing, everyone. Our partners are growing up.
We're watching our babies bloom into wonderful cultural reference flowers.
Just the most, the angstiest flowers that ever there were.
Thanks for being with us through the first 23, 24 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah, 23-ish, 24. That sounds about right.
Stick with us through the next 52, and then we'll all get back together again about this time next year and decide if we feel like we're going on.
If there's still electricity, we'll see how we're doing.
So
welcome
thanks.
Back.
Happy New Year. Hope you had a safe one. If you didn't, you're probably not listening to this.
Enjoy this episode
and the next 51 after that.
Woohoo!
And then we all got quiet.
What were you talking about, Max?
There's a new...
As we all sip our tea.
There's a new horror podcast called Radio Rental with Rainn Wilson. He plays the, like, narrator, not really narrator, but like the person
Dwight
who
from
ties
the Office.
The story together. Yeah, mm-hmm. Except he's playing.
He's a Shakespearean actor, is he not?
Cool, an actor.
When he is not in The Office.
Well, he was in The Meg as like the weird billionaire.
I guess
his
career is taking a turn.
Yeah, and he's Terry Carnation in Radio Rental. It's kind of a cool one. Hannah, tell Chastin and Eric what you told me about the crowd at the show you went to. What age you are in concert?
My age is a bunch of people in blazers apologizing to each other for actually like accidentally bumping each other's phones. I was very strange.
That's how many concert years old.
That's
right. I was listening to the acoustic piano performance of Andrew McMahon. And he was like, so I wrote this song when I was 16 or 17. And then he performed his punk rock music. Yeah. And then Christmas songs. It was fun. And then today I had fun small town church flashbacks.
Oh.
I just wanted to go and sing Christmas carols. And there was a service that I could walk to. It was like half a mile from the hotel. And it was at the time that I needed to be. So I showed up and they like saw me coming down the sidewalk and I could see all the little old ladies like gather around the front entrance and hold the door open for me. So I had to walk up like in front of all of the staff and be like, how did you find us? We're making you a name tag. And then I wore a name tag. It was great.
That sounds great.
So I was speaking of name tags. I was thinking that for our holiday party, we should have name tags, but just for the new people and not for anybody else. So that
single them out?
Just to call them out and make them feel super awkward, like they're not going to feel awkward enough.
Yeah, your sadism thing is too far sometimes.
Really?
They also called on us and had like every guest stand up and announce who they were. And
no.
I just...
What?
No,
like three different
you.
Parties of people did
what?
It. And I was just hiding like the pastor
no.
knows who I am, but he's going to have to call on me by name.
No.
He wants me to do this.
I think we're going to have to bring all of this down just a touch.
I am.
No. Talk the way we're talking. Okay. Just
no.
No, thank you.
I think everybody's actually speaking closely into the mic a little bit and it's really good. So.
Isn't that kind of moment in church like a... They seems like it would feel like AA.
They applauded.
Wow.
Yeah, like at AA.
For each guest, yeah.
They don't applaud at AA, my man.
Have you ever been to AA?
No.
Is there any applause?
Do you want to go to AA? I mean, we could go together.
If you ever go, here's what you need to know. You say at the beginning, "Hi, my name is Max, and I'm a drunk. And I'm just here to listen today. You know, I really think I can learn a lot from your experience." And that way, like, you don't have to talk and people think that, like...
Or you could go to Al-Anon with me and they hand you a book and you just have to read a paragraph. And when they come to you, you can just say that you pass.
Oh, actually, you know what? The 12 and 12 meetings, the 12-step meetings, where you just read part of the book, those are actually the best because you don't really have to talk. You just read part of the book. You don't have to talk about yourself. Those fucking rule.
Yeah, because that's what I like about Al-Anon is you just read part of the book. Yeah.
What's the point of that then?
It's like you listen to other people and you can talk about what
listen
you're
to other people reading a
no you can talk like about what you're reading you can say book. You know, and this applies to me because or this
that
really
just sounds
speaks
like
to
middle
me.
School English class.
I think that's about what we're planning to do today, right?
Yeah,
read some things and then say what they mean to us.
Well, kind of.
Look at that segue.
Yeah, it was sweet. You know, Tess, you and I were talking about what we do on the podcast the other day, and you mentioned that, like, we don't really do 101 level stuff. You didn't say those words, but we don't really usually have 101 level conversations, but I think we're doing 101 level today.
I feel like we're establishing a lexicon today.
Right.
Hi. welcome to the Pod Cultcast.
Wait, we're recording now.
Yeah, where's the?
I was gonna just do it. Welcome to the Pod Cultcast, where we talk about life, love, learning, and libido as we share our journey through polyamory and kink. I am Chasten,
and I'm Eric.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Max, and I sound different because I have a cold.
I'm recovering from a cold, and we're all drinking tea, and we might have sniffles, so bear with us.
Yeah, so what I did was I made a list, and I started just off the top of my head, but made a list of terms that we use and terms that people ask me about, and then I kind of scoured a couple online resources for their lists and added some more stuff. So I think what we're going to try to do, we'll see how, like, if it works out kind of clunky, we might change how we're doing this, but I'm just going to kind of throw a term to each of you to make sure everybody's involved and get you to say what it means, and we'll talk about it a little bit. And I made two lists. I made mostly polyam stuff or non-monogamy stuff and mostly BDSM kink stuff. Mm-hmm. And the astute listener will hear that I throw most of the BDSM ones to Chasten because she has actually done a lot of like educating in that area and can probably be more succinct than the rest of us can.
This is a podcast where we talk about love and relationships, sex and kink, and polyam issues, and whatever else comes up. While we talk about those things, we will probably also touch on stuff like abuse and violence and mental health challenges. Those can be difficult topics, so keep that in mind moving ahead.
Ahead?
Move your head.
Move it.
Somebody said Bippy.
I said Bippy.
Yeah, sweet. All right. Eric.
Yo.
What polyamory?
Who?
What's polyamory?
Well, I would say that it's the second most broad version of just the definition of non-monogamy. And I say second most because non-monogamy is about the most umbrella term.
Sure.
For that, and it narrows it down in the sense that it is, many loves.
What is it to you?
Well, see, this is where it so quickly goes into the weeds of individual definitions.
Yeah, but many loves, so meaning having actual romantic relationships, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what... Does anybody here have experience having a polyamorous relationship? Or I'm just kidding.
No.
Okay, so how would that contrast, say, from being a swinger?
Well, there's not necessarily the love part involved there, yeah.
Right. We generally accept that swinger means just fucking.
Well, it leans in that direction. There's still a lot of central area to that Venn diagram. But, yeah, that's, again, I think I've said it before. It's jocks versus nerds.
Jess, what were you starting to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that there's a term that I've heard thrown around, and it might be a term you're going to come to. So if you want me to, like, put it in
just
the parking lot, then we can come back
just
to it.
Keep going.
but polyfuckery is something that I've heard. that people use for swinging as well,
right.
Which is simply just meaning that I involve myself in several sexual relationships, but I don't involve myself emotionally with these people, or I have friendships with them, but they're not romantic relationships, which is different from polyamory because it's not like a love situation.
And right. I think that often people use polyfuckery as sort of a derogative term, right? Like, I think you're,
it definitely holier, is a
connotation. I think you're more polyam than thou types will say, like, oh, he like claims to be polyamorous, but it's just really polyfuckery.
Those aren't real relationships.
Yeah, that's,
but
that's
don't true. A lot of people use swinging, and don't a lot of the polyam community people use swinging as kind of a derogatory term?
Yeah,
too?
Certainly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, haven't we used it as a derogatory term?
You know, I probably have. I've tried not to. I think that, like, I've definitely talked about how you and I stayed away from that term when we were, in fact, doing Craigslist swinging in sort of the early days of our marriage. Well, you know, most of our marriage.
I mean, because I have engaged in swingery activities with...
Sure.
With both you and with Eric, I mean...
Mm-hmm. Well, even in recent times, you know, I have one person that I know who's a friend of all of us who, like, you know, that's mostly the relationship I've had with her for, like, 3 years. Mm. So, I mean, yeah, I think all of us have been swinger-ish, but all of us have, like, stayed away from identifying ourselves as swingers.
Yeah, and I think, well, and I think part of it is because that... I think we tend to not identify as swingerish, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, anybody, please save me. but because we tend to like have really good friendships with people,
right.
And fuck our friends.
Right.
Would you?
Yeah, well.
Or exes.
To even step back from that, it's not at all a positive versus negative connotation. It's just a here versus there.
Yeah. Okay, well,
it's a slightly different thing that's along the same lines, and you are that way or not that way. It's kind of the same as like what clothes you choose to wear or whatever.
Well, in that vein then, and in the vein of fucking our friends and not having good good boundaries, let me skip on the list that I made here and say, how about Chas, why don't you take a stab, because I think you have the best handle on it, at relationship anarchy.
Oh, okay. All right, relationship anarchy. So, I am a relationship anarchist, and relationship anarchy is engaging in multiple relationships, but those relationships don't necessarily have anything to do with one another. That is that I have agreements or, consent-driven, guidelines within those individual partnerships, but those don't extend to any other relationship outside. So I've said this before, I think. So my relationship with you, Max, like the guidelines that you and I abide by in our relationship and the consent that you and I have, that doesn't apply to my relationship with Eric. And things that are happening inside my relationship with Eric don't apply to my relationship with you. So those relationships don't have anything to do with one another unless I choose to let them have something to do. So if either of you have questions, I'm not doing a good job explaining this today. If either of you have questions about the relationship with the other person, I have to consent to share that information. So relationship anarchy is not like, oh, like it's all punk rock and I don't want to tell anybody anything. Relationship anarchy is simply that I have to consent to share information. I don't have any obligation to have any of my relationships involve anybody else. I choose this kind of kitchen table polyamory situation, and that's probably a term you're going to bring up. But for me...
For you?
For me, relationship anarchy means that my relationships are separate entities, and there is no governing document or body or anything or way that I have a relationship that is true for all of my relationships.
So you're talking basically just about non-hierarchical.
Yes, it's non-hierarchical.
Meaning you don't have a primary partner who is of greater status than any other partner.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I have a relationship with you that is domestic, and we have financial entanglements that right. I don't have with Eric at this right. time. And Eric, you and I have romantic and sexual entanglements that I don't have with Max.
Right.
So there are different levels of commitment and responsibility in both of those relationships. And that doesn't make either of those relationships more important, or, and it doesn't make either of those relationships, I don't know where I'm going with this.
It sounds like all of the agreements that you have are always one-to-one. So yes. Sometimes I hear folks saying that they're in a triad or they're in a quad. And what they mean by that is that everybody makes decisions together and they all kind of have one relationship.
Right.
Whereas in relationship anarchy, we tend to think about those as completely independent from each other.
Yes.
Taking it back yes. to like geometry class terms.
Yes. There's
right. less transitive property.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And I think all of that's true. And I think that's true of how we use the term. And I think it's useful in the context of this conversation. I think that also people tend to lump in with relationship anarchy the part that you pared away a little bit a minute ago, which is more an actual anarchic. I don't, I am a punk, so I don't want to use the term punk in this context, right. but like the sense of like relationships don't need labels, they don't need boundaries,
right.
they
right.
we're just like going with the flow, doing our thing, and that's we don't have to call
that
it
is important to me. I do have some level of traditional, there are some labels and things like that I like, but that's a choice that I make with the partner that I'm with.
Right.
And that's not a choice that society gets to make for me or that I make based on traditional values.
Right.
That's something that I'm going to make with my partner. So, Max, if I wanted to call you the Grand High Poobah, that's Poobah. What I could call you, Poobah, from Flintstones. I had Flintstones yeah. on the mind.
Yeah, yeah.
With
the Order of the Buffalo, is that what it was?
Right, yeah. And Eric, if you and I wanted to be space aliens together, and that was what we considered our relationship, we could be that. And that would have nothing to do with the Grand right. High Poobah over there. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And in that, Max, if for some reason you wanted things that I had with Eric, there's no comparison. There's nothing to do with each other. So right. you don't have any right to know what's going on with my relationship with Eric. Information I share
yeah.
is information I share. You can certainly ask.
Right.
And I get to consent to what I share.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So there were, in talking about relationship anarchy, Chasen mentioned a couple other terms that I wanted to get into. So Hannah, why don't you take a stab at kitchen table polyam?
So kitchen table usually refers to multiple relationships where everybody is on friendly speaking terms. They could all sit around a table, have a meal together, and be, in friendship or even, consider those people to be family. So that would be different from relationships that are so independent or so separate that those folks don't necessarily interact on a regular basis.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's yep. it. That's not much. that, not much more else.
Well done.
We got one.
right. Hey, Chas, why don't you hit BDSM for me?
Bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, sadism, and masochism.
Right. So it can be several different things. People refer to it different ways.
Right. right.
So.
And how much bondage, of that did you mean to say that you were hitting it? Hitting the BDSM.
Yeah, hitting.
Yeah,
I did not. But, right. But so it's an overall term for
right. It's an, play, an acronym. Play. It's an acronym for types of play and also types of power dynamics. Because dominance and submission are more so power dynamics in my feeling.
Than the actual action itself. Then
it, right. And
so it's the physical and the psychological
exactly.
side.
Exactly. Exactly. Sadism and masochism aren't necessarily strictly about pain and feeling pain. They are causing pain and feeling pain. They're also about the mental state.
Right.
Right.
So you mentioned power dynamics.
Yes.
And I have the word dynamic written down here.
Yes.
Because I use dynamic just as a... kind of an easy descriptor. You know, if I'm talking about a couple, we'll know. I might say, oh, they're in a dynamic, you know, just to kind of say where they are. So help me explain what a dynamic is, or a power dynamic is.
Can I throw one out there?
Yeah, go ahead.
It is the parentheses that defines a thing. You know, it's okay. It's within those parentheses, or is this dynamic? It's such a very, well, I just mean in a broad, it's a doorway to a label, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But it's not a label itself.
I agree with that. So there's a, I can't remember what university it came out of, but there's a study that, and I'll throw a link to it in our show notes for this. There's a study that came out of some university, and they studied the way that power flows through relationships, and especially in terms of decision making in relationships, and how dynamics can change, and how decision making can really be affected, and can hurt couples. And I'm talking about, heteronormative, monogamous couples in this case, because that's what was studied in this study. But they were talking about decision making, and this is something that I've used in my coaching in terms of relationship dynamics. And the study dealt with things like who held the power to make the decisions about groceries, who held the power to make the decision about going on big vacations, and did the power to make the decision come from the person who said, I want to go on a vacation, now you decide where? Or was the power with the person who was deciding actually where they went? It was a really interesting study.
Okay, yeah. That's an interesting corollary to...
Yes. Go ahead. And there was an interesting thing that came up, and this has been something that has come up with kinky couples that I've worked with, where you've got the person who says, I want to go on vacation, and then you've got the person who comes up with the options for where to go on vacation. So say that person comes up with four different places that they really want to go. So that person has come up with four options. So they really have the power, because they've given four options of places where they maybe want to go. And then the person who's making that ultimate decision is picking one of the four places that the... Am I making sense here? Yeah. So
whereas in our relationship dynamic, there's only one place I want to go on vacation, so it's pretty easy.
It's easy. You always want to go to Orlando.
Right.
So, right. But so say, for example, Max, you said, I want to go on vacation. And I said, okay, we could go to
Orlando.
We could go to Baltimore. We could go to...
There is a theme park outside of Baltimore, so okay.
We could go to Baltimore. We could go to L.A., or we could...
Ooh, there are lots of theme parks in L.A.
Or we could go to Tokyo.
Ooh, the best theme park in the world is in Tokyo.
So these are the three places. Now, I have decided that these are the three places that I want to go.
Right.
And I make these decisions. So I've decided these are three places I want to go. I'm just going to let you pick some place that I want to go.
Right.
So really, who has the power?
Right. So that correlates to dominance and submission, and the submissive
having
the actual power because they are
exactly submitting. Because I did all of the work. Who has the power there? So the power is flowing. So in any relationship, whether you're dealing with dominance and submission, or whether you're just dealing with people who are just going through their lives and it doesn't have anything to do with kink, nothing to do with power dynamics, nothing to do with dominance and submission, you always have a transfer of power going on. There's always somebody who makes the decision, and there's always going to be somebody who's researching the decision. Sometimes that's the same person, sometimes not. So this power is always flowing. And that dynamic is the parentheses, like Eric said. That the parentheses is what's surrounding how that power works in any given relationship. And it's always different. And that's why between two people, it's always different, because the power moves between two people differently all the time. I find it really interesting. I'll find a link to the study and share it. I gave a talk to a local kink group on, just kind of like how to balance your life and kink. And I found this study and I thought it was really neat. So. That was it.
That's awesome.
Cool. Hey, while we're still close to talking about acronyms and letters and the alphabet, hey, Hannah.
Hey.
This might seem kind of obvious, but
okay.
Kind of obvious and elementary, but let's do it anyway. LGBTQA plus.
There's so many. Like, she's about to chime in on that.
Oh, I just wanted you to add the I.
The I. IA.
Oh, go ahead. What is it? What's the letters?
It's like playing Simon now.
I will add all of the alphabet forwards and backwards until everyone feels specifically included. However, you can still say LGBT if you want to.
Okay. Well, what's the I? I don't know what the I is. What's the I?
Intersex.
Intersex. Okay.
I'm not sure.
Sorry if I just excluded somebody who is also included in the I.
And questioning is sometimes queer and question, or Q mm-hmm. is sometimes questioning and mm-hmm. sometimes queer.
Sometimes queer.
And A is
ace.
Asexual, mm-hmm. or isn't there some other thing that we sometimes, aren't there two A's?
The top A-romantic, grading
aromantic. Aromantic, and isn't there also, there's another one now, isn't there?
It's the plus.
The
oh, no, I'm thinking NB.
Into the microphone.
Mm. I'm thinking NB.
So as we include the plus to include yes. everybody who feels that they have not been included.
That's exactly right.
Couldn't they have added the plus sooner and then
avoided the Q and the A?
It just, well.
Or QAnon. All right, that one didn't go over great.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Well, my.
I just know that some of them mean more than one thing, and I'm afraid that I'll leave somebody out. Sure.
And this is where my
own yeah.
increasing old man tendencies, where my view on it is not really necessarily how I feel about it.
But labels. It's just,
yeah, it's cumbersomely long.
Okay,
now.
Boomer.
Right, see?
You,
I'm for including everybody for their own, you know, what have you.
It's acceptable to just say LGBTQ.
Yeah, it
is acceptable to just say that.
Oh, okay. All right, so there were still a couple that we missed in that we went through when we were talking about basic terms, such as Eric, what's a primary?
Well, if you were in a hierarchical sense, it would be the main one, the top one, I'll leave that alone before it gets offensive.
Your bae?
A bae? Sure.
Generally spouse, right? Else? Like it's usually...
If it,
nesting
yeah.
partner, if, the person you spend
gonna,
the most
yeah.
time
yeah,
with.
Yeah, I was going to yeah. throw nesting partner to you, Hannah. What's a nesting partner?
That would be the partner that you... Or partners that you live with and make your home with. And a lot of times folks use that to make it less hierarchical. You are not primary in importance, but you are primary in the sense that we are the ones... primarily spending time together and making a home together.
So, Oliver.
Correct.
No.
Making a literal physical nest right now.
How do we feel about the Dan Savage word monogamish? Do we have feelings about it?
I have feelings.
I don't really.
I think it invites people in. What are your feelings?
Okay, so I have feelings. So, I have weird feelings. So... Eric and I are kind of closed poly. Yeah, because we just don't have the emotional space to date other people outside of what we have right now.
Keep speaking for Eric.
Well, no, I generally do things about as simply as I can. And
so he does me about as simply as he can.
Yeah.
Can I get a high five? Sorry. No, but I feel like monogamish is just people. It's just people who are checking things out. They're people who fuck their friends.
Or they don't. I mean, but that doesn't mean that they would still necessarily define themselves as monogamous.
Right.
It feels like to me that it's the same as like swinger and polyfuckery, like they're all sort of
yeah. There's a lot of overlap in a lot of these terms,
or like poly adjacent.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I have friends who I know as you know part of monogamous couple have said, "Hey, if we ever get to that point down the road where we're interested in bringing somebody in, let's be open to that conversation." And I feel like that's a monogamish perspective that says, okay. "Well, we're not ready to act on this right now, but we're both letting each other know that it's possible.
Right. I also think that monogamish is very close to unicorn hunter because it's always about bringing somebody in and not exploring outward.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Sure, I guess. Let's try to get it a bit more broad than that even.
Yeah.
If I was in a monogamous relationship and I was like, if you wanted to go out and have a drink and like kiss somebody, that would be fine with me. I would feel like that was monogamous. Like,
it's a toe dipper word.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
Toe dipper.
Toe dipper.
It's a toe dipper.
It's a toe dipper.
We're getting way ahead on polyam for a term, so I'm gonna try to knock out a couple kink terms.
Oh, okay.
Power exchange.
Oh.
The parentheses again.
Power exchange, like a power exchange relationship or power exchange in play?
Yes.
Close a circuit and that current flows.
Basically. So power exchange relationship is when you have somebody who is in charge and somebody who is deferring to that in chargeness. Or when you have a switching situation where they change who is in charge during that play and or relationship. There are different types of power exchange. There's power exchange during a play session. There's power exchange during like your dating relationship or your you know, where you do it every once in a while and it's like a fun thing. And then there's total power exchange where it's like a 24/7, like this person is always in charge kind of thing, which seems fucking exhausting to me.
Yeah, completely.
I don't want that much responsibility. But power exchange is basically, it's basically where somebody is giving up power to someone else. And somebody is taking responsibility for that power.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. How do we feel about the term vanilla?
It depends
Hannah,
on whether
how do you feel about the term
vanilla bean or bourbon vanilla or, but generally it's kind of delicious.
Yeah, vanilla is rich and complex and awesome.
But it's not everything.
No, I feel uncomfortable with it a little bit just because of how nasty people can get. You know, I don't like throwing out... I don't like labels, so let's say that. I think that they're really important to advocacy and they are important to defining relationships. Whenever you create a label just to exclude or mock people, that's not cool. And I think that vanilla has become that in a lot of ways. But what would we say instead? What is the useful,
right,
meaningful version of that term?
Not monogamish.
I have always said, well, what does kinky mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
And that has typically gotten me what I need to find out about people.
Right.
Because if they say, oh, well, like rough sex and smacking your ass, and I go, okay, how do you feel about knives? And they go, oh, no. Well, then I know what I need to know
right
at that point.
That's not necessarily vanilla. Was that the point of the question?
No, I'm saying, like, if I ask somebody, if they say, like, oh, I'm kinky, and I have pegged them as vanilla.
No, I get what you're saying, because in a totally different world of things, it's like when people say that, I listen to all types of music. I listen to the country music.
Country and Western.
Country and Western.
Well, I wasn't thinking of Blues Brothers, I listen to country music and hip-hop.
Here we go.
Yeah. But also we hear people who identify as swingers or people who identify as polyam.
Who don't even identify as kinky.
Use vanilla to refer to people who aren't swingers or refer to people who aren't polyam. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing that people use to refer to people who aren't the thing they are as it relates to sex.
And right. Here are the things that I consider vanilla. I consider vanilla anything that you do in the bedroom sexually, that involves toys, anything, what have you. It can involve rough sex. It can involve spanking. It stops being vanilla when it starts involving shame, psychology, psychological manipulation, pain that is intended to be painful and not just playful, toys that are not intended to fuck, and yeah, that's in bondage. That's when it stops being vanilla for me.
I think that a lot of other people would have probably quite a different definition there.
Well, yeah. In well, the it's, sense and that, it's like, a spectrum, and when you start to draw a line on that spectrum, it's kind of a slippery slope, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's very slippery.
In any event.
It's sexual.
Plus, there's a lot of vanilla people that have plenty of psychological dynamic to it that has nothing to do with being vanilla or not. It's just people being people.
Yeah, so I think in that sense, like you were saying, whatever the thing is that we're doing that we're talking about and keeping secret from somebody else, you know, then we look outside of that little circle and say vanilla.
Right.
And that's fine in that like particular context to say like, oh, that person isn't the safe person or the right person to have this conversation with. Right. Otherwise, you know, individuals have to have a real conversation and say like, what does this mean to you? What are you looking for?
Also, like, oh, they're not cool. They're not in the cool club.
Well, okay. So in that,
well, that would be the negative part.
In
of
that, in not in the cool club, for me, I use a term that is also derogatory in connotation. I say square.
Uh huh.
And when I say square, what I mean is both not kinky, because people use vanilla for not kinky, and also not in one of these other promiscuous labels, the polyamory, the swinger, the non-monogamous, or whatever, right? So when I refer to guys I know from work, guys I grew up with, whatever, as my square friends, it's not any less derogatory than vanilla, but for me, it's a more umbrella term, and also I think vanilla is kind of corny, so yeah. I don't really like
it's,
using it.
It's like saying square, only trying to like sand the edges off a bit.
It's like pearl clutching. Like if
come on, that was
I gotcha.
It's basically, I think of vanilla when I think of the term. I think of somebody. If somebody came to a sex party and they were shocked by what they saw, that is a vanilla person. That to me is a vanilla person. That's what that means.
Okay.
A pearl clutcher.
Great. Who wants to take a stab? Another term that we missed while we or just kind of passed over.
Was it knife play? A stab at knife
actually,
play?
You know what? Now that you mention that, because of knife play, what's edge play? Because often people think, you know, anything with a blade or a razor or whatever has an edge.
Edges.
And therefore, edge play must mean knife play. Chastin, what the fuck
She's
is going
very
on?
Very excited, really excited to talk this about this.
Holy shit. All right, I tell you what. You start talking about this, I'm going to go grab a Gatorade. And I'll be right back.
Okay. So, edge play. Edge play means that it is such a dangerous form of play that you could be injured in a permanent way. It has nothing to do with what kind of play it is. It has nothing to do with the fact that there could be knives or anything. Rope is a form of edge play. Breath play is a form of edge play. Knives, blood, needles, anything that could put your body into shock could cause fire play. Anything that could cause permanent marks, scarification, broken bones, death, anything that could put you in the hospital, anything that could leave you, that could put you in therapy. For example, interrogation play, an extended interrogation scene could fuck you up for months. Basically, anything that is very, very dangerous, requires a lot of training and preparation, is edge play.
So it putting a point on that, then it is that
you're being really sexy this episode. Thank you for your puns.
And punny.
Thank you.
The puns are unintentional. They really, really are. I'm not sure.
No, they're not.
No, but the edge that you mean isn't a physical thing. Is right. It's the you're playing with the balance on going over that edge and making it a past play and into
it's
the
dangerous.
Danger.
I mean, all kink play is dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. You can get seriously injured. That's why we have risk aware consensual kink. Is that a term on there?
Yep.
I feel like I've also heard people use edge play to mean they're pushing their personal boundaries. Yes. So something that might not be considered edge play for somebody else is for you, because that's a particularly scary or uncomfortable place for you to be in.
And I believe that that is true, because if it is something that it can psychologically damage you, then that is truly edge play, and that can be personal. And that is why it is important to negotiate. Is that also a term you have?
No.
I don't know how it would not be personal.
Add negotiation to your list.
Do you want to talk about negotiation right now? Then I don't have to write it down.
Oh, okay. Negotiation is when you talk about all of the possible things that could happen during play, including the things you want to have happen, the things you don't want to have happen, any health factors that could potentially be a risk for you during play, any psychological factors that could affect the play. And when I'm talking about play, I'm talking about any sexual or kink play. Also talk about things like how you need to be treated before the play and after the play, and what implements may and may not be used. And we're talking about things like hard limits, soft limits, stuff like that, safe words.
More terms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now that we've said this word 15 times in the last 2 minutes,
play.
Who besides Chasten wants to take a stab at play?
it's again, it's very broadly encompassing anything that you...
Right. So swingers use play to mean playing with another couple, fucking, fooling around with another couple, or single, or whatever.
Well, it's how about it's the finical? It's the physical manifestation of the dynamic. Well, no, yeah, because it wouldn't always be physical.
Right. What is play to you?
Well, it's the enactment of the dynamic. How about that?
When have you played?
It's all I do. I'm a player.
Don't hate the game.
Yeah.
No, wait. Damn it. I fucked that up. Don't hate the player. Hate the game. Yeah. Fuck. Hannah, you were about to say something.
Was it?
Before I got
stupid. It is broad and it is personal, but I think play is a little bit euphemistic, so we use it to mean whatever the thing is that we don't want to call out directly, but it just is there to indicate that we are engaging consciously and intentionally in the thing, whatever our thing happens to be, whether that is, you know, sex. And I think usually we also... That ties into what is a scene when you set physical and temporal limitations on where play is supposed to happen. You know, if we have a game, then that means that we have rules and we have time limits. There's a structure around it.
And so that structure is the scene?
I think so.
Anybody want to agree, disagree, expound on that?
I think so. I mean, it's all about choreography, right?
Yeah.
If you have a game, you have rules, like Hannah said. And if you have a scene or you have play, think of it in terms of theater, you have choreography or you have a script.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what intimidates me. Like you were saying about like a total power exchange or a 24/7 dynamic is for me, like that's a scene that takes up my entire life. I would feel as if I were acting something out all of the time.
Right.
Which is, I mean, more, very alluring, but very terrifying.
But yeah, more playing a character than playing yourself.
Is that's that how I would feel about it. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, we've talked before about the fact that one of the hard things that I have with kink and with play and with scenes is I've never learned or taken the time to learn how to structure a scene so that you're telling a story with a scene. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's a crescendo. There's a, you know, a coming Dynamo. Down. There's rising action, following action. There's the prestige. There's the the shine and the turn. So far, I've used literary terms. I've used a magical term. I've used pro wrestling terms. Yeah. There are many different ways
You know, Max, I always, when, so there's a class that I teach on interrogation scenes, which are one of the most dangerous, I think, scenes.
Yeah, they're because fucked up, dude.
Because they fuck with your head. And I go into interrogation tactics from like actual government documents. But I like to think of it as a roller coaster, which is a term you should understand.
Yeah.
If you think about a roller coaster, you've got that like click, 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 click that takes you up to the top. And then you've got your first big hill and then it's twists and turns. And so when I think of structuring a scene and negotiation. Like, negotiation is figuring out, okay, what are the things I'm allowed to have on the roller coaster? Am I allowed to have a water element? Am I allowed to have a dark tunnel? Am I allowed to have scary things? Am I allowed to have, like, a shooting thing, like, where we can shoot little monsters? Am I allowed to have a slow portion where it's a small world? You know, that's what negotiation is figuring out what we're allowed to have on the roller coaster. And then designing the scene. Being the top or being the dom or being the person who's figuring out how to do that scene, you're designing the roller coaster to create an exciting experience where you have that click, click, click that starts it off. And then it's an exciting ride that comes to the end and you've had a fucking good time and you feel good at the end. That's what it is.
Right.
And you've included all the elements that you're allowed to put in there that you've agreed to that were safe for that person to have, but they didn't know what order they were going to come in. Like, they told you, okay, you can have knives, you can have fire, you can call me a little bitch or a slut, but they didn't know when it was going to happen, and they didn't know, like, that it was going to be icy cold knives. They didn't know that it was going to be, like, being called a slut while they were being choked or whatever, you know? Like, they don't know that stuff, and what they know is what they've agreed to and what's safe, and what you do is you take it and you put it in this order that makes it exciting. So that the adrenaline happens. So you're choreographing the chemical release in their body.
Right. When you and I were new to going to, you and I, Chasten, were new to going to play parties or going to the FET club and seeing other people do scenes, the thing that like made it click in my head when I didn't really get what I didn't get about it, the thing that made me understand that I still didn't get it, was like all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is a wrestling match. Like,
yeah,
there, you know, there are all these terms in structuring a wrestling match. There are different kinds of spots. There's the shine, there's the turn, and all of these things are like real, like inside jargon that like even wrestlers don't talk about a whole lot anymore because they're trying to keep kayfabe. But like, that's what it is. Like,
do you have kayfabe on your list?
No, but I can talk for 3 hours. No, about kayfabe.
We have it's somebody who has asked. Thing. We do have somebody who has asked to be a guest and come talk about wrestling on the podcast.
Okay.
So,
well, why don't we just do a separate podcast where we sit down and talk about wrestling? Yeah. So that was how something clicked with me. That was like, oh, I still don't understand this. But now this is an overlay I can put on it so I understand what I don't understand. You know, it's the we don't know what we don't know sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the polyam list because there are still a couple terms that we just glossed over. Eric, what's a triad?
It's three people that are in a relationship either with all of each other or two separate relationships that are intertwined. But mostly... it's the three people together, yes.
Right, yeah. So it's as simple as that. It's right there in the word, right? And I also saw that when I was scanning through lists, the term dyad, which, like, it's two people in a relationship.
That's like unsweetened that's tea to me.
The dyad is the thing you sign when UPS comes to make a delivery at your house.
It's the device?
Yeah. It's got a dyad. Yeah.
I will murder you if you ever tell anybody else to talk into the mic again.
Oh, no.
Okay. Hannah.
Hey.
Closed poly.
So, multiple relationships, but no new relationships or entanglements outside of the group?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple, right? And is that the same as polyfidelity, more or less? Chas, yeah. you wanna chime in on that?
I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it seems more or less the same, right? To say that you're being polyfidelitous to one or two people and not seeking relationships outside of that, not open to relationships outside of that, that seems pretty much the same as closed poly to me.
I guess so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense.
Cool.
Great podcast.
So we sort of like... didn't really say the term, but we talked a little bit about polysaturation.
Oh, we didn't talk about polysaturation.
We kind of passed over.
Okay.
What'd you say, Eric? No? Don't think so?
I think you're
fucking wrong.
I didn't hear polysaturation
totally
at all.
Possible I missed it.
Yeah, I didn't.
So polysaturation is a thing that people talk about being, but often then another opportunity arises and you find that you're not quite as polysaturated as you thought you were. But I'm polysaturated. I've got a wife and a girl, and I'm dating another partner that I've been with for like 10 months. And my time and emotional energy is expended. I don't have room to add into that. So that's what polysaturation is, right?
Yes.
Anybody got more to add to
that? Out of emotional resources. Or just time, I guess.
Yeah.
It's usually time, right?
It's usually time.
The lipids that stay solid when they're at room temperature and then liquefy.
Saturated fats.
Yeah, there's poly, unsaturated, and mono, and
that was
a humorous term.
Womp, 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 womp.
Wow.
Yeah, that joke didn't land at all.
Saturated fats domino. There's something there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I like blueberries on a hill.
So are we polysaturated then? Because I've got him, and then you've just got me. Are you polysaturated?
I'm just a hermit.
Yeah, you are a hermit.
Hermit crab.
Depends on where you are in life. There's a lot else going on outside of relationships. Work and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a little meme-y thing that we see all the time that's, you know, someone saying that they're polysaturated, and then they see somebody else and they go, oh, hey, cutie.
Yep.
That status can change in a moment.
Do you have new relationship energy on your
thing? I do have NRE. Does that mean you want
to
talk
like
about
you
NRE?
Talk about
So, okay. So I'm going to first talk about new relationship energy, and then I'm going to talk about new relationship energy addiction.
Okay. Go ahead.
So new relationship energy is the rush of oxytocin you get when you have a crush or you start dating somebody for the first time. And it is the release of oxytocin and the change of serotonin in your body. And I could be wrong on the science there. Don't check me. Don't at me. You can't at me because you don't know where I am on the social meteors. But you could follow us at PodPodCultCast on Twitter. Or at PodPodCultCast on Facebook or at Cult with a V on Instagram. And please, please, please follow us, like us, share, tell a friend.
Just don't at her.
Don't at me. Anyway, so new relationship energy is that feeling, that rush, that excitement. And new relationship energy can last anywhere from 3 months to up to 3 years in a relationship and then start dissipating. And there are people who can suffer from new relationship energy addiction, which is where you're constantly seeking that rush of crushy feeling where you want to feel excited about new partners. So you're constantly seeking new partners. And this is something that the polyamorous community is constantly criticized for because it's just your new relationship seeking all the time. And when that happens, you're not paying quality attention to the relationships you already have, and they tend to suffer because you're constantly seeking these new relationships, and the old relationships just become sort of days on the calendar, and yeah. So.
And I think that as people who practice non-monogamy, practice polyamory, that those feelings can be extended for us because we tend not to spend as much time with a new partner as you might if you were a monogamist or a serial monogamist or just somebody who did not have another partner, right? Typically, when you're in a monogamous relationship, a new monogamous relationship, all of a sudden you spend all of your time with that person.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the time you do not have that option when you have other partners.
Right.
So those feelings stretch out a little longer because you don't see them as much.
They do.
You don't have sex as much.
And there's also a thing where it seems like polyamorous relationships or non-monogamous relationships tend to accelerate because of that.
Right.
Or in spite of that, I'm not sure, where it seems like you get to the I love yous faster and you get to the seriousness faster.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
you tend to rush into things faster.
Yeah,
like,
but
oh,
I found this partner. I think that might be us, though. I think that I think that not us, but I think that, like, if you're...
In other words, that's one way to do it. It's not the only way that it
happens. Yeah, and I think that, like, if you're a person open to these types of relationships, you're probably a person whose emotions are a little like closer to the, those kinds of emotions are right. a little closer to the surface. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're a little quicker to express those things than, you know, other people might be. I don't know.
I think that's fair.
I'm just theorizing. Hannah thinks that's fair.
I think that's fair. I have spoken. My judgment will stand.
Mandalorian, nice.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda.
No, we're one of those podcasts too now.
I didn't even do the thing I was planning on doing. wait till we break. Oh yeah, respect Jesus.
Respect Jesus.
Respect Jesus.
The meme thing Hannah sent.
I sent you a meme.
I didn't look
so
at
you
the
could
meme.
Think about the various weird guys in your various towns.
Okay, so Hannah has sent a meme. I'm waiting for it to load. Every city has a guy they all know about. You can visit a friend in their town and see a man dressed in robes riding a horse. And your friend will go, oh yeah, haha, that's horseback Jesus. And then that's just the end of that explanation.
Yeah, that's true.
They he did had that, a, the, in the movie PCU, there was a touch of that. It was the naked guy showed up.
And
that's all it was. It was right. just a naked guy.
In Somersville, West Virginia, we had a guy named Squirrely, and Squirrely once tried to rob the bank, and that was a very exciting day.
That straight out of Central Casting there.
Was he the guy of the town before he tried to rob the bank?
Yes. Okay. Squirrely was around for a while. And then my mom ran one of the papers for a while before it was the other paper, so you can't look her up, so it's fine. And one of the big stories one day was that there was a chicken literally crossing the road.
Okay. So. Thank you, West Virginia. I was riding.
Chickens.
I was riding with another friend of mine, with our friend Raider, who was like, Raider's awesome. Anyway, he's still alive. I mean, he still is awesome, one would presume. But anyway, we were riding down the road.
How do you know?
I don't know. Anyway, we were riding down the road, and like we stopped because a friend. He was like, "Oh, this is my buddy," and we stopped so he could talk to his buddy, who was named Doo Doo. So we, like me and the other friend, started suppressing laughter, and then Raider finished up his conversation. We started driving away, and he pulled over to the road to yell at us, like, "Man, that's his name! You can't laugh at that man's name!" Like, his name is
I don't know. I think you can.
Anyway.
Not necessarily right in his face. But that might be rude.
That's driving away.
So, is it time for me to bring up the Four Agreements, or is it time for me to tell a tragic tale from my childhood?
Neither. Okay. We're not doing either one of those things. So, as I suspected, this went longer than our usual conversation. So, mm-hmm. why don't we take a little break here, and we'll carry this over into next time. How's that sound?
It sounds excellent. But you said you wanted to talk to the listeners about something before we go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that.
What he just said.
And also.
And we're out.
And also, if you like what we're doing here, if you enjoy listening to us, we don't really advertise this in any way. We're not part of a podcasting network, so we don't have that kind of support. So what we need is your help with spreading this out. Post on your Polyam and Kink Facebook groups, on your Tumblrs, on your Polyam and Kink Reddit groups, and let other people know that we're out here if you like what you're listening to and you want others to listen to us as well.
And
we
also
would appreciate
FetLife
it.
Groups.
Oh, and also FetLife groups,
also
of course.
FetLife
yeah.
groups, yes.
And, the Patreon's nice. We appreciate the Patreon. It helps us pay for hosting and for resources that we think are important.
Do you want to know?
The easiest way you can help us is just kind of spreading the word.
And we have, we just met a goal on Patreon, which is an exciting thing. We met a goal. We are making $40 a month on Patreon, which means that we are now able to upload all of our episodes to YouTube, which means that...
Wait, are we going to be videoing too?
No.
Oh, okay,
just
good.
No,
good,
just
good,
the audio, yeah. But that means that Nobody we will be... That means that people will be able to stream us on YouTube, because that's a thing that people do, apparently. And I think that there's a closed captioning option, which helps with our accessibility. Our next goal is, if we hit $75 a month, we're going to be able to have transcripts, and that's helping us with our accessibility goal. So if you are interested in subscribing on Patreon, it's patreon.com/podpodcultcast.
Cult with a V.
Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
You've just heard the Pod Pod Cultcast with your hosts Max, Chasten, Hannah, and Eric. Our theme song is Spencer Blues by Lobo Loco. Our break music is by Gabarino on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you.